this industry has had a chance to mature. The dairy industry, the animal industry, the agronomy industry at Delta is still going through those growing pains. They're still suffering the lack of infrastructure, et cetera, that makes the operations viable. And that's the reason for the delinquency in those categories. I think that when you get visionary enough to look 5-10 years from now, you will see that what we are trying to accomplish is to put these industries into that same position. And they will be in that position. We will be in a position to where that our delinquency rate is equal or better to that of the horticulture. And so I would like you to consider that aspect of it as you consider this. In amending the bill, there are several problems that I see that are significant in those that the commissioner has recommended. If you take away the production credit from the top producer and put it to the in-between, you create a situation of where it encourages delinquency or not being completely successful. On the other hand, if you restrict it only to the successful, it isn't really helping those that need it, and it creates a problem for us when we go in, if we have, for some reason, whatever it might be, a loan which needs to be restructured to refinance. It could possibly cause problems. There is very little incentive from the lender point of view to refinance that, because the financial incentive would be there. I believe that the bill, the way it was constructed, is the most equitable way for the entire industry to do that. Again, as I mentioned before in my previous testimony, I believe that many of the problems that we're discussing here, as far as delinquent borrowers and successful borrowers, could be alleviated if the Ag-Revolving Loan Fund staff was changed to where that there were professional people who had agricultural expertise there on that level to sit down. When they come out to my farm and walk through my farm, they know what they're looking at. They know what they're looking for, and they know how to define it when they're doing it. I believe that it is an excellent idea, as you mentioned when I stated it before, that we propose some type of a method to remove the register requirements from hiring individuals into the revolving loan fund and allow them to go out and find experts to put in there to do this. Thank you.
Is it a copy?
My comments were directed at the segments of the industry, that there are some that aren't going to, some segments of the whole industry, rather than individual firms, that aren't going to succeed or at least dilute our ability by affecting loans. There are also some that have succeeded. Do we wish to continue, give those people, that particular whole segment, this is why I raised the question about how much was going in horticulture. And what is your feeling about, leaving production credits to certain particular segments of the agricultural industry, but if they excluding horticulture, I think we get too many screens to be excluded.
I would feel uneasy about recommending that to happen. I farmed in Delta for 2 years before I moved to Point McKenzie and took over the dairy farm. And I've been somewhat closely associated with some of the people at Palmer that are involved in vegetable production.
Some of the larger loans are for people who grow greenhouses, who grow plants and animals, for example, plants and ferns for office buildings.
Yeah.
Do we wish to?
Well, there is a segment of horticulture which basically is a retail entity. And I personally, in my mind, exclude them.
Nevertheless, they would be available for the agricultural credit. Which would then dilute the amount of money available. We want to be somewhat restrictive.
My recommendation on that, excuse me for breaking in there, but my recommendation on that would be to suggest that this would be retained strictly at the wholesale level. In other words, the farm to market type level, and not the retailer to consumer level.
Okay. The other question is not addressed too much in the conversation, but certainly addressed in the background, is the holding in the ARRC loans, which, as the commissioner director said, are not not made under the same rules, and therefore the department doesn't have any, the division doesn't have any handle on those. I realize there are individual farmers who are deeply involved in those, but it opens up another can of worms.
The AARC refused to make any loans into the project, and we're all project farmers, and so, you know, I don't have anything in there, but I certainly am sympathetic to them. You know, I know what they're experiencing, and I certainly wouldn't speak against them.
When the subcommittee meets, I think we need more data as to what loans are out there. I'd like to see something go forward, but we frankly don't have enough data. I can see why the chairman wants the subcommittee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other member of the public like Ms. Lee?
My name is Karen Lee. I'll try to make it brief and ask for a little while. I think the main point I'd like to make is that I agree with many of the things that Weaver has told you generally, not as regarding the specific recommendations for the bill. But I think where we really part company is he seems to believe that the loan fund is worth saving without saving farmers. And I don't. I see absolutely no purpose for the loan fund. Farmers do not survive along with it. What will happen, this was gone over quite thoroughly in the Finance Committee yesterday in the Senate. There is an enormous bureaucratic drain on the fund. Some of it is directly associated with the fund, and some of it, as Mr. Weaver said, is not. Apparently $257,000 of it is not. There's an additional, according to the 86 data that we've seen, there's an additional somewhere in the neighborhood of $800,000 that apparently is associated with the loan fund. And at those rates, let's say $1 million a year, it will only take 7 years for the loan fund to be totally exhausted if farms are not able to revolve. I think the point is we have to make the loans revolve by making the farms work and not make the loan fund revolve by killing the farms in the attempt to hold the loan fund. I mean, why hold the loan fund if it's just going to fund bureaucrats, basically is what I'm saying. The Alaska Farmers and Stockgrowers is a statewide organization of which I am a member, not a board member. And I don't purport to speak for them, but I will say that at their November annual meeting, they put together a platform, and on it was support for a 3-year extension of the existing production credit bill. That was all segments of the industry, dairy, horticulture, everything. So, you know, I'm speaking as a dairy farmer, but there are a lot of people.
The bill had a lot more in it than that. That's a little problem.
Yeah, I understand your problem there. I wasn't aware until recently that it did address those others. I'm not even certain, you know, I have a number, occurred to me while we were sitting here, I have a number of entities that have lent me money, not the ARC, but private entities. I was wondering if they would qualify for these. Because FMC Finance in San Jose, California would probably be glad to hear that. So would I. Anyway, the thing is, I also sympathize with Representative Ellis's point of view about, you know, what are we doing here, getting these all in a row, and what will they all do? As Kurt and I pointed out, what is happening over in the Senate is they're allowing them to file up in finance. And, you know, I'm not really very familiar with the legislative process. The only, I'm a little bit nervous about the idea of creating a subcommittee that would look at all of our bills, if it then still has several other committees that it would have to go through and then also go through the Senate. Do you understand my concern? I don't know if there's enough days left. The thing is, you know, we don't want to study it so much that we wind up with a work of art that's a day late. You know, I mean, the farms really need some help now. And the production credit has been a positive force in the past 3 years, and I think it can be for the next two or three as well, while this is all being sorted out. It won't kill the loan fund by any means in the next couple of years for this to go on. And, you know, I would be in favor of there being some sort of a mandate attached to much of this legislation that says, you know, this is sunsetting on so-and-so day, and if you don't have a plan in place, you know, don't come back. I don't know if that's possible, but you know what I mean. I mean, if you can give us a year even or two to work it out so that there's a cohesive blueprint for the future and what we're going to do about the past, you know, rather than doing nothing this year so that we're all pretty well not even here next year. We've from the farm sector, and a lot of us won't even be here. And in closing, I'd like to also reiterate something that Representative Larson said about, you know, that if we're too worried about that somebody who has money might possibly be rewarded, we're liable to wind up with nothing. You know, he was speaking about the 1.9 million revenue base being lost out at Point McKinsey versus losing a whole 9 million. And there is a great, great deal to be lost here. It's not just personal fortunes and personal lives. There's a great amount at stake for the state as a whole. The milk that we produce does not only substitute for an import and go through the economy 5 or 6 or 10 times more than the same product produced in Washington. It also, well, it just is a much better thing to do, you know, to keep your money here. Yes.
Representative Cookman?
Yeah.
No. You realize that you're not going to get any extension at all unless the legislature and the governor agree to the term. So one of the things you need are members who have studied the question are willing to argue the question with the governor mm-hmm. and with the other house. What we're trying to do is get enough information to be able to do that in a rational manner. And but we're not trying to hold up the bill, certainly.
I'm asking a question as an ignorant person. House Bill 415,
which gives you a direct support out of this committee with positive mm-hmm. recommendation. This bill does, the second bill does represent some problems that are unclear, the answers to which are not in the backup, mm-hmm. and where you have a position by the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund board members who are active farmers against passage of it because it opens up the production credit to people who are not borrowers from the revolving loan fund. Mm-hmm. Some of these questions have to be looked at. We have to have some real numbers, and we do not have real numbers, and I cannot, you know, even though I'm terribly sympathetic and a former homesteader, I cannot defend this to the governor or to, you know, any other member to raise these questions about. You know, does this just open up another hole in the bottom of the barrel out of which the money is going to run? It won't, you know. So this is one of the reasons I'm going to look into it.
Well, okay. I unfortunately can't answer your questions on that end of it either.
Right.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public who should testify on this legislation? All right. Representative Nygaard?
Well, just as a comment, I don't have any problem with going into a subcommittee. We can work those out on those numbers, but, you know, on that. But on this particular thing, since there is a piece of legislation on the Senate side that's moving without that one form on there, that we can go ahead and address. But the issue is that on the Alaska rural business there, is that some of those monies were state monies, which was monies that came from the Department of Revenue, which went in, that were loaned out. I got this one. We can work that out on the thing. I mean, we're not talking like it was a private source on that. But anyway, that's fine.
Pretty good. Okay. Well, then we're going to refer this to the subcommittee, and the subcommittee can bring back report. Next matter on the agenda is House Bill 472. Representative Boyer has a conflict, so. Yeah, Mr. Burns, would you like to join us? Speak for the department. There's a proposed committee substitute. I guess incorporates suggestions from the department in.
Yes, that's correct. Mr. Chairman, my name is Randall Burns, Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing. First, we'd like to thank the committee for entertaining this committee substitute.
In such a timely manner.
As you may remember, there was a hearing that we had last fall following some problems with its proposed regulations, or actually not even regulations, proposed policies regarding specialty contractors and the definition of trades and things like that. And as a result, a major focus of their concern was the fact that we were not solving the problem that mechanical contractors, they cover a great deal more than just two trades. They're not specialties and they're not generals. And so there was, we've been trying and exploring avenues to correct that problem in the current construction statutes. And when Representative Boyer Ellis's and Boucher's bill was introduced, Ms. Bain and I and Ed Flanagan from Representative Boyer's office talked and wondered if this was a forum to solve those problems. And as a result of those conversations, I did some drafting, and then we've, since then, obviously, George Unterwolf and from your staff has done that, in an attempt to solve some of those problems. What I'd be happy to do is, well, in fact, what the CS now does, it creates a new construction contractor category for mechanical contractors specifically, and defines a specialty contractor as three or less trades instead of the current language, which is two or less trades. And it also obviously creates a licensed profession in Alaska for called mechanical administrators, similar to the current statute regarding electrical administrators, and provides a board to examine and license those administrators. When the controversy erupted last fall, I spent some time talking to Mr. Rutland of the Mechanical Contractors Association in Fairbanks, and he's been very helpful in educating me about the nature of his profession. And during those discussions, he indicated that the construction professionals were interested in establishing some industry performance standards. And I think that that's where the meat of this bill, which is the creation of the Mechanical Administrators Board, comes from. As you know, current statutes require not anything more than registration. There is no licensure. And so this would, in creating mechanical administrators, it gives us some additional competency standards, which I think would greatly increase the quality of construction in Alaska, and for that reason, we urge its adoption. I would be happy to go through this bill, maybe if you're running out of time, and we'll have to take it up another time. Okay.
You had some concerns you expressed, and you want to ask some questions?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I personally like the original bill as proposed by the sponsors as opposed to the committee substitute, because it addresses their need, and that is setting up the board of mechanical contractors and all of the safeguards that we normally put into other sections of statute. I somewhat object to including the issue of the specialty contractors and with the refined definition in this bill, because I think it weights this bill down. In the hearing last fall, the specialty contractors realized that because of the definition and interpretation that the department had in defining specialty contractors, it was limiting them in being able to carry out a full scope of duties. And
right.
The problem centered around the state of Alaska probably was the greatest culprit in that a lot of the contracts let by the state that were contracts for mechanical contractors indeed included other specialties.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the department's narrow interpretation of what a special contractor could or could not do, that it posed some problems. Now, whereas we have addressed the needs of the special contractors, and actually what we've done is better than I think the contractors could have expected. If you look at page 3, lines 13, 14, we've set up a third breed of cat here. That's not fish nor fowl. It's a whole different hybrid here, which I don't have any problem. My problem with handling special contractors the way we are, in fact, are there other disciplines out there that are specialty contractors that have the same problems as the mechanical contractors that are not aware of it at this point, because current statute is unclear. And I guess before we make those changes, we ought to go to public hearing, let it be known, because there's a large group of specialty contractors within the state of Alaska. There are several little splinter organizations that I've dealt with in the past that I think need to know what we're proposing to do, particularly dealing with their area of work, and deal with, in essence, that should be dealt with in a separate subject and not weigh this bill down. And that would be my source of concern.
Mr. Burns?
Mr. Chairman, in fact, I'm surprised by your comments, Representative Furness, because, first off, the only change we've made in this bill to the definition of specialty contractor is to actually give them the ability to have an additional trade and still claim that they're a specialty contractor. I don't think that's going to offend any of them. It's probably going to, in fact, I know from the conversations and the reason that we have suggested this, is that what we have is, and I can give you an absolute perfect example, someone who wishes to be a specialty contractor who does roofing. They do roofing and they also do carpentry, and they do both rough and they do finished carpentry. And as it is now, they have to be a general contractor. And there are a number of other professions like that out there where, if with the increase of one additional trade, they could remain a specialty contractor as opposed to having to upgrade to a general contractor. And our problem right now is that specialty contractors only require a $5,000 bond and a general contractor is a $10,000 bond. And no one in the state of Alaska can get a $10,000 bond. And so this is greatly going to increase the number of people who can go to work as contractors in this state. And in fact, I'm meeting with some people next week who are in fact specialty subcontractors who are, I think, interested in this, just this kind of a change. I don't see that this is going to offend any of them. And in fact, the problem that we had and we're talking about last year, you're right, part of it was the definitions that we put out, but those definitions are widely recognized definitions, and the only group that was really had problems with was the mechanical, and for a valid reason, which is there's no way we could fit them into two trades. Mechanicals, there's plumbing, pipe fitting, sheet metal, and heating, and no matter how you squeezed it, they weren't going to fit into two, and they're also not generals. And by creating this mechanical contractor, treating them separately, and I think you need to do that, particularly if you have the rest of the bill, which is creating a mechanical administrator, you have to have a mechanical contractor to be an administrator of, just like we have an electrical administrator for electrical contractors. And that's part of the reason for this change in this sub-bill, in the sponsor substitute. So, I really don't think that we are taking away anybody's ability to function. And in fact, I view this, and it's one of the reasons we support it, is that it is greatly going to increase, I believe, the number of people who can go to work as contractors with a much lesser bond requirement than they might otherwise have.
I may be about, Mr. Chairman. Now, I don't disagree with you,
right.
Mr. Burns. My major concern, if you read the old definition that the special contractor has been working under now, basically says a special contractor is a contractor whose operation does not fall within the definition of a general contractor. Very vague, says absolutely nothing. The general contractor is normally, in the old definition, is confined to two trades or two specialties.
General contractor was more than two distinct trades.
Or more than two.
Right.
Correct. So there was some vagueness in that. Now, what we've done, we've put some specifics in there. the industry at this point, and you mentioning that you're meeting with some people next week that are very much interested in it. I think we should leave with those people also. We should provide them an opportunity to respond to this change in the definitions there, the more exacting definition, to give them an opportunity to come before us as a mechanical contractor and say, yeah, you know, that's a fine idea. No, there are some other little quirks here we ought to be taking care of while we're doing this. That's my concern. Now, the basis of this is, for the last 6 years, particularly in the legislature, I've dealt principally in this area. And I know the magnitude and impact of the specialty contractors. And on any given day, there are about 2,000 of those persons who can send those little postcards in and make your life utterly hell. You know, they're very, in fact, Mr. Chairman, a great deal of those in the Spinard community. And that's my major concern with waiting this bill down with that. It's a valid thing, we should do it. But I just hesitate to do it in this particular piece of legislation without going back to them with some type of a hearing, giving them an opportunity to massage it so we can fully see. As we were not aware of the magnitude of the mechanical contractors and all the kinds of things, this subsection 8 here, page 3, is an ideal situation. You've actually done the work on that. But who else in that specialty contractor area may also fall and need those same kinds of handling? We don't know that yet because we've not massaged this language out on the streets and let these people. As I was saying, Mr. Chairman, in the Spinard alone, there is a large holdings of specialty contractors. When this issue came before the body in the 13th legislature, there was some 2,000 persons that were signed up statewide. And in teleconferences, a great majority of those came out of the Anchorage, in particular this Spinard community. I was really surprised. It is a major issue, and you know, I don't disagree with the way you're handling it. Sure. I think we need to go back to them and let them massage it. But I would strongly recommend we not try to do this in this bill.
Chairman, I just have one other comment. The definition, when we talked in last fall also, the definition of special contractor whose operations do not fall from the definition of general, that's true. We were unclear as to what that meant. We asked the AG's office, and he said there was no doubt that meant two or less, and that there was no other way to interpret that, that you couldn't read it any differently. And so that's the other reason why, in this rewrite, we're expanding the number to 3 and making it clear that we're talking about 2 or less, or 3, in this case, 3 or less. That's all I'm going to make that clear.
Representative Menard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Burns, on the fiscal note, we're looking at 6.5, and it looks like the revenue was $3,000.
Well, it's impossible to know. In fact, I was just talking with Mr. Rutland about how many people we're talking about would become mechanical administrators. And we don't know. This fiscal note is based on 30. He thinks it may be 100, in which case that would change this position paper. But technically, we won't really be licensing anyone as an administrator until the beginning of FY90. And so this is assuming that this 3,000 assumes that there are some people who will take the exams and get licensed, but most of them really won't start doing that until middle of next year. And we just don't know what that number is going to be. But we would do what we do with other professions and try to set the fees after a certain period of time to meet whatever we think the numbers are.
I'd like to hold off just a little bit on that. Mr. Burns, if you could just, you might want to join us here at the table. We've got a few empty seats if you want, but we did have some members of the public signed up to testify. I can't read your name here, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. my name is Eugene Rutland, and I'm the executive director of the Mechanical Contractors Fairbanks.
R-U-T-T?
One T. R-U-T-L-A-N-D.
Oh, L-A-N-D. L-A-N-D?
D.
Okay.
Rutland.
Please.
All right. I'm the executive director of the Mechanical Contractors of Fairbanks, and I also serve as the executive secretary of our state organization, the Mechanical Contractors of Alaska. This is a bill that we strongly support, and we
approached Representative Boyer about this bill. At the present time, as Randall Burton pointed out, there are no requirements to become a construction contractor in the state of Alaska other than posting a bond and a modest insurance policy, except for the electrical industry, which has electrical administrators requirement, which this bill parallels that. We believe the purpose of contractor licensing is to guarantee to the public that the person who's selling their product to the public is a competent person, as they have a right to expect that they are. And compounding that is the fact that the government on every level has reduced their inspection forces. In the city of Fairbanks, it's a 50% reduction seen in Juneau, or excuse me, in Fairbanks. And just 2 years ago, the state of Alaska Mechanical Division sent a letter to all registered mechanical contractors with a form where they could, due to the shortage of personnel that those people had, that they could witness their own pressure tests and fill out the card and send it back to the state. So I think that we believe that that in this atmosphere, it requires that a construction contractor be a responsible person. And we believe that this bill accomplishes that.
Did you have the opportunity to review any of the proposed CS?
I believe I have the most current copy. I got it off the table when I came in. I had plenty of time to read it.
Did you have any? Do you support the committee substitute proposal? The proposed committee substitute.
Yes. Yes, we do. It answers our problem that the other problem that we had with the Division of Occupational Licensing. It takes care of that beautifully. I don't see where it will cause the other specialty contractors any problems, but I'm not a specialty.
I've been informed by staff that AGC has also approved that draft also. Mr. Burns, did you contacted AGC?
We contacted them and told them about the changes, and they're aware of them, and they've not said anything negative on that proposed changes.
Okay. Is there any other member of the public who should testify on? Okay, are there questions for the witness?
Just Mr. Chairman, going back to, I don't completely understand Representative Furness's concern on it. If you go through it with me again on the specialty business here.
Well, the concern is this. On run, currently you have two kinds of contractors. There's a general contractor, there are more than two, but principally two, a general contractor and a specialty contractor. The AGC primarily represents general contractors, and I assume that there are some specialty contractors in there. Specialty contractors are normally those small guys that prior, the mechanical contractors would have been a good example of a specialty contractor, in that the state of Alaska would let a contract, and that the contract would be for some type of services or a job that a mechanical contractor would indeed do. But complying with the bid requirements, you would find that the definition was too restrictive. The interpretation of the current definition was too restrictive, and they could not totally do the whole job without going outside and employing someone else to do it, for example, because the interpretation was that they could only work in two areas, provide services in two specialties. Now, within the state of Alaska, what we've done with this bill, you've got the general contractors who have a wide range of abilities. Here we're setting up the mechanical contractors. We're giving them a fairly wide range of specific items that they can do. Now there's a third category, a specialty contractor, and they range from plumbers to, I assume, certain carpenters, you name it. Now that's a whole unique group that we have not heard from at the table today. This bill affects them to a larger degree than it does the general contractors and the mechanical contractors, in that the bill addresses the needs of the mechanical contractors and does a reasonably good job of it. It's fairly neutral when you deal with the general contractors. But it does set a whole different arena. Not saying that's a bad arena, a negative arena. It sets a different playing field, in my opinion, for the specialty contractors. And that under the old statute, it was very vague. It says a specialty contractor is a contractor whose operation does not fall within the definition of a general contractor. Under this definition, we say a... Where is it here? A specialty contractor means a contractor other than a specialty mechanical contractor whose business operation requires the use of not more than three trades. You see. Now, how many of those specialty contractors that because of the uniqueness of their trade, or uniqueness of what they do, are required to operate in more than three trades? We don't know that because we've not given them an opportunity to respond to this change of language. That's my concern.
Mr. Burns?
If I just might, right now, because of the definition, it's limited to two trades. And we do not license anyone as a specialty contractor for more than two areas.
And this summer we heard a lot of testimony from folks who had a problem with being limited to two trades.
Right.
So that
they
by,
want to expand it.
Yeah, so by setting it up to three, we're trying to address some of the concerns we heard as a committee this summer.
And I really think it expresses, it solves a number of complaints that we get about people who are just, they only have one more trade they want to get in, but they can't make it, so they have to upgrade to a $10,000 bond and be a general. And I mean, you could draw the line where we know why not four, why not five. We're trying to keep there some distinction. We've broken out the mechanical, which clearly uses a lot of trades, but increasingly now for the specialty contractor, it's going to allow them to choose one additional whole area in which to function without having to go to the $10,000 bond. And they are right now limited to two, and we don't license them, and the Department of Labor cites them if they're involved in more than two trades.
So, Mr. Chairman, let me clear up something here. The Department of Labor, yes, are citing those persons, but I think we came to a conclusion at that first hearing that the Department of Labor was using an interpretation that I personally disagreed with. The statute does not say specifically that a specialty contractor is limited to two trades or less. It does not say that. And that was the point, that was why you were holding that hearing, because it was giving you some problems.
Right.
Some of the contractors did not buy the fact that you were limiting them to two trades. So I, for the record, I disagree with your interpretation, with the department's interpretation on that. No, that's not true.
The department is currently enforcing the two trade rule.
We are, because the AG's office says that the only way you can read the current definition of general contractor, which says that it is more than two trades, and therefore if a general contractor is more than two distinct trades and a specialty contractor is a contractor whose operations do not fall within the definition of general, that means two or less. And so that's how we have been having. They've told us that's the way we have to enforce it.
Okay, Representative Copeland, you have a motion to adopt the committee substitute.
I'd like to move that we adopt CS for House Bill 472, Labor and Commerce, the bill reported.
All right. Is there any objection to the motion?
I object. I assume, let's make sure we have two before us, Mr. Chairman. Let's see, we want 317-88, so I object for the reasons stated, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All those in favor of adopting the proposed committee substitute signify by usual sign.
Aye.
2, 3, 4. All those opposed. Okay. The motion carries.
5-14-51B, word draft.
Correct.
Word of all.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Bernard.
Just so I understand it, so we're going from 2 to 3. The testimony that came about thought that it was more positive because it added more people that could apply for work. They could come in on a lesser fee on the bond issue and stuff.
And I disagree with that.
You disagree with that?
I disagree with that. That was not the nature of the testimony we heard during that hearing. The nature of the testimony was disputing the department's interpretation.
Mr. Burns
is a neat guy. I'm not picking on him. I want that to be.
Right.
No, they were disputing the attorney general's interpretation and the fact that they would be excited.
And they were being cited because they were practicing more than two.
More than two. Right. In fact, we don't know how many in some instances right. they were practicing in. And still, at this point, we still don't know how many they're practicing in.
And that's
sir, if I might interject, since I was involved in that discussion last summer, Mr. Furness was very supportive in that. The problem was the department's definition of a trade. We felt that mechanical is a trade, and the department felt that plumbing is a trade, heating is a trade, sheet metal is a trade, and that was where that was our.
Right. So we take care of that issue in this legislation. We take care of mechanical. Plus, in addition to that, we expand specialty from two to three.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
So we're breaking. Normally, it was pipe fitters and mechanical people.
They had a real problem because they didn't have a mechanical contractor, and the department was interpreting them as being all of these different trades. So they had to be a general
right.
rather than just a mechanical. Yeah.
No further discussion. I'd like to move to House Bill 472.
There's some language here. I'd like to get some handle on it, if I may.
Okay. Motion's before us, and there's discussion.
Let me draw your attention. I just want to make sure we understand that if the wording is correct. Draw your attention to lines 20 through, let's say, 25, page 1. It states here that each applicant for a mechanical contractor certificate the registration may employ more than one mechanical administrator. Why? What does that mean? Why is that there? I guess.
Mr. Burns.
Mr. Chairman. What this is doing is this is exactly parallel with electrical administrators. In order to be a mechanical, an electrical administrator, you must employ at least, an electrical contractor, you have to employ at least one electrical administrator who's passed the test and we have certified him as competent as an electrician. In this case, this is saying that you have to, that a mechanical contractor has to employ at least one person who has met the requirements of the mechanical administrator, the testing, so that we're, again, going back to Mr. Rutland's comments about the issue of competency.
And here you say that he may employ
more than one.
More than one.
Sure, if he wants to have, some of them may have three or four on their staff. There's no problem with that.
Well, the way the thing is worded, it leaves a question. If they can employ more than one, is there a reason why they can employ more than one?
I think the reason it says that, Representative, is because in another section of the bill, if you look over on page 5 of the bill, line 16, it's a new section, administrator limited to one licensed contractor, and it says a person may not qualify to operate as a mechanical for more than one registered contractor or business entity.
Now, that was, again, the other one. I misplaced it. Which line were you referring to?
That's line 16.
Line 16. Let's see.
Page 5?
Yeah.
Line 16?
Are you working on 317?
On the wrong direction.
Yeah, that's just it. There you go.
If you need an administrator or person to essentially supervise the planning and running of projects run by the contractor, there may be one of these mechanical contracting outfits that has contracts in Anchorage, in Juneau, and in northern Alaska. It would be reasonable for them to have a separate mechanical administrator in each of those areas, whereas while one administrator can supervise more than one job, it would be rather difficult if they're geographically widely
certified. That's correct.
All right.
Go ahead, let's just go with
that. Yeah, motion's before us. Ready for a vote. All those in favor of moving the bill with individual recommendations, signify with the usual sign. All opposed?
I'm with the aye.
Okay.
I'll find it another day.
Okay.
I appreciate your coming.
This meeting is happily adjourned.
Hallelujah.